In the previous lesson, we have seen an algorithm able to acquire a pulse train from an incremental encoder, and this algorithm was implemented through a software routine, mainly executed under a polling approach. But we said also that the same structure, the same philosophy could have been implemented also into an interrupt service routine. In other words, the solution that we have seen was completely software, let's say. Today we see another approach that can be considered completely hardware and features the use of some components, basically counters, shift registers, and decoders. The idea, as shown in slide 45, is that we need a logic circuit, digital logic circuit, that receives the two channels A and B, the two pulse train, and a temporization signal, a clock, let's say, and decides if the rotation is into the backward direction or forward direction, that is clockwise or counterclockwise, providing a suitable information to an up-down counter that will increment or will decrease a suitable counting value to estimate the amount of the rotation itself. What it is important to observe beyond the logic operativity of the circuit that we will see is the sampling time, let's say, we need to use in such a circuit that is faster than the one that has been considered for the software approach. In other words, we must sample, but it is better to say we must synchronize the electronic devices that that made such a kind of hardware circuit with a clock frequency that will be necessary to be 8 times the original frequency of the two channels A and B. This solution, of course, is very suitable for those circumstances into which the signal coming from the encoder is very fast. This typically is not due to the fact that the sequence of the pulses is too fast for the microprocessor. Nothing is too fast for typical microprocessors. Instead, the possible not convenient situation is that we have a rotation velocity that oblige the microprocessor to continuously acquire and the pulses and to detect what kind of rotation took place and so on. This is not, as we have already said several times, this is not the best way to use a microprocessor, so we dedicate a hardware part to perform such a kind of tasks, and periodically we will have an acquisition from the microprocessor of the values contained into the counter, just to understand and to estimate the evolution of the rotation and the amount, the quantity of which the rotation amounts. In slide 46, we have the complete circuit that correspond in slide 45 to the block with the question mark. The input to this circuit consists of the clock signal, the A channel and the B channel, and the output you see in the right part of the slide corresponds to those two OR gates that will be connected to the up counting input of the counter or to the down counting input of the counter itself. In the middle we have two decoders, and we have also two devices that are called shift registers. These shift registers are basically two flip-flops joined together that receive each one the value of the pulse train in channel A or in channel B, providing in output after a clock period the value, the present value of the pulse, let's say A, and the value of the pulse train in channel A at the previous instant of time, better to say at the previous clock time. So you see that we have AT and AT minus 1 as outputs of the upper shift register, and the same situation, the same layout is provided in the lower shift register that receives the B channel and provides in output BT and BT minus 1. 1 corresponds to 1 clock cycle before the present one. The two outputs of the shift registers are sent to the inputs of the decoder, and precisely in the input A and in the input B, the output of the first shift register is provided to the upper decoder, and as well the output of the lower shift register is provided to the two inputs of the lower decoder. As you know, a decoder is an entity that considering the combination of the values in input will select the output among its own ones that corresponds to the codification of the bits in input. In other words, if the input pins in binary corresponds to 011, that is 3 in digital numbers, the output pin number 3 will be activated while all the remaining others will be in high impedance. So we see that the two inputs of every decoder corresponds to comparison, we could say, within the same signal, within the same channel, between the present value of the signal and the signal at the previous clock time, at the previous, let's say, clock cycle, or if we want, at the previous sample time. In other words, by sending AT, AT minus 1 to the first decoder and sending BT and BT minus 1 to the second decoder, we are trying to understand, hardware speaking, let's say, with a digital circuit, I mean, we are trying to understand if a commutation on the channel A or on the channel B took place. As you remember well, this is the first part of the algorithm we have implemented previously in the software code. The second part of the algorithm says, if a commutation took place, try to see if the new value of the channel is equal or different compared to the value of the other channel. For doing this, You see that in the first decoder, in the upper one, that receives an input, the values of the A channel, the third input is the present value of the other channel, the B channel. And the same idea is replicated in the lower decoder that receives the two input values of reporting the B channel at present and at the previous clock cycle. But the third input, the C input, corresponds to the value, the present value of the A channel, the other channel. So the idea under which the connections are conceived and implemented is clear. The three inputs implement the comparisons required by the algorithm. A commutation took place. The new value of the channel A is equal to the value of the channel B, or is it different? On the basis of this comparison, the decoder will activate a proper output line, and now it is only a matter of connecting that line to the upcounting or downcounting input of the counter, just to increase the total counting or decrease the total value accordingly to the philosophy that we have defined in the previous lesson. That is, if we detect a clockwise rotation, we increment the counter, otherwise we diminish the total value that is stored in it. Let's see an example. Some outputs of the decoders are explicitly written into the slide, so it should be quite easy to understand. For example, you see the output 110, that is the output number 6 of the upper decoder. This corresponds to have A equal to 0, B equal to 1, and C equal to 1. Remember that the numbers, the binary numbers, must be read from right to left, that is, from the least significant bit to the most significant one. 110 corresponds to have a commutation in the channel A, that is, from low to high, from 0 to 1, and correspondingly, A will reach the present value of the channel B, that is, will be equal, I mean. So this is a typical situation if you look at the previous time diagrams that we have seen in the last lesson. This corresponds to a counterclockwise rotation. So the output of the decoder will be sent to the lower OR gate, whose output is sent to the down input count command of the counter. Same philosophy, but now applied to the clockwise rotation, is followed in the output number 5, 101. Again, I'm referring to the upper decoder. 101. It means that we have a commutation in the channel A. This time we have a commutation towards the low level, that is from 1 to 0, and A is different from the value of B. So when we have a commutation and in A and the value of the two channels is different, typically, this is a clockwise rotation. So, the output number 5 of the decoder will be connected to the OR input, whose output will be sent to the up command of the counter. Finally, just to see also a similar situation for the channel B, we can consider the 5, the output number 5 in the lower decoder. 101 in this case means that the rotation brought a commutation in the channel B, a commutation from the level high to the level low, and the values of A and B is are different because B is 0 and A is 1. In this case, the situation identifies a clockwise rotation and a counterclockwise rotation, and the output of the decoder is sent to the lower OR gate, whose output is connected to the down command of the counter. Of course, we could analyze all the outputs of the first and of the second decoder and connect everyone to the right place, but of course this is not useful because it would introduce only complication in the diagram. The general idea is clear. Notice that those outputs that correspond to no commutations in the channel A or in the channel B are useless. So there is no need to connect them to the OR and then to the counter. For example, I'm talking about of the output number 7. 111 means that there is no commutation in channel A, looking at the decoder, at the upper decoder, and okay, A and B in this case are equal, but there is no need to modify the value of the counting variable that is stored into the counter. Let's try to understand now the need for keeping the sampling frequency so high as we said previously, and in particular at least equal to 8 times the original frequency of the pulses in channel A and in channel B. Slide 37 tries to give us a first idea. Looking at the sequence of the pulses in a typical clockwise rotation and showing how a sampling respecting that constraint is able to identify all the phases into which we are interested, that is the commutation of A, falling and rising, independently on the commutations of B, again falling and rising. That is, we need to detect if A has changed independently on the commutation of B, better, without having a contemporaneous commutation of B. And this is necessary to be assured both in the commutation towards the high level and in the commutation towards the low level. So, since the difference in time between a commutation on A and a commutation on B is one-third of the period, it is clear that we have to go faster than this velocity and 8 times the original frequency is a good compromise in such a case. But we can go deeper into the details and to take a look to what could happen if we don't respect the constraint we have just now said. I can anticipate that the problem is we have an ambiguity in the output detection of the values of the channel, and we could be able to not recognize the commutation and its direction, and the direction of the rotation correspondingly. In slide 48, I have put an example that shows in the upper left part a typical sequence of pulses in A and B corresponding to a clockwise rotation. I also wrote in green dotted line that corresponds to the instant of time into which we sample the value of the line itself. When we say that we sample, we mean that the clock will give the enable signal to the electronic device, to the shift register, and to the count, and to the decoders, so have the electronics circuit sample the value of the signals. In particular, I wanted to stress the situation, the particular situation, when the clock signal, the sample, arrives exactly onto the commutation of a signal. But let's go on a step-by-step basis. In the right part of the slide, in the upper right part, I have written the value of the channel A, present clock and the previous one, and of the channel B. So we have the inputs of the first decoder, the upper one, and below we have in red the values of the channel B at the present clock and at the previous one, together with the channel A. So we have highlighted the values of the inputs in the lower decoder. And we followed basically the evolution of these signals for 8 samples, considering that due to the periodicity of the signals, after 8 samples, the situation basically repeats without modification. So let's look at the instant time equal to 1 that corresponds to the green line at the left in the sequence on the picture. And we can say that A of t is 0, A of t minus 1, the previous clock, is 0, and also the channel B is 0. Then continue, let's consider the instant 2. Now we have to make a consideration. We write 0, 0, 0 because the previous value of A is clearly 0. The present value of A must be decided, but after the decision, that will be the decision, the convention that we will follow always in situations like this. So I mean, in the sample moment, we are exactly onto the edge, and we have to choose if the value of A is the previous one or the next that it will go to assume. Let's be conservative, so let's say that when we sample onto the edge, the value is the previous one, in the sense that the commutation has not yet completed, being completed. So we write AT minus 1, 0, but also AT 0. And B, correspondingly, at that time, is 0 again. Instant number 3, we write 0, 1, 0 because the signal A, in this case, is definitively 1. The commutation was completed, and AT minus 1 follows the previous convention. So we are on the edge. We keep the previous value, 0. Instant number 4, 110, because A is on the high level, both the present value and the previous one, while instead B is on the edge. And again, we apply the same philosophy, so B is not perfectly changed, and we keep the previous value, the value sampled at the previous instant. So 110. Instant number 5, A remains 1, so 80 minus 1, 1, 81, and B is on the level, so we say 1. Instant number 6, we have 80 and 80 minus 1 again on the level, on the high level, so 1, 1, and B is 2 on the high level, so 1. Consider that for A we are exactly onto the falling edge, but again we apply the same convention as before. Instant number 7, the commutation on A was completed, so 80 is 0 and 80 minus 1 is 1, instead B is 1. And finally, instant number 8, 80 is 0, 80 minus 1 was the instant after the edge, so again 0, and B is still on the edge, but we keep the convention, so we maintain the previous level 1. If we continue into the sample, we have the repetition of the shape in channel A, so the sequence of the values will be the same. Now let's comment the same series of values for the channel B. At the instant 1, B is 0, and we have to decide what is the value of the previous sample of B. Consider that in this instant, we are at the beginning of the low-level interval, so the previous one was exactly onto the edge. So we can say that applying the convention, the value of B T minus 1 is 1, while instead A is definitively 0, so 0. So we write 1, 0, 0. Instant number 2, the commutation is on A, but we keep the convention, so A of T is 0. Instead, B is 0 now, and was 0 also at the previous instant of time. Instant number 3, A of T has completed the commutation, so it is 1. Instead, B is 0, and the same was at the previous clock cycle. Instant number 4, A of T is on the high level, while instead B is on the edge, so we keep the convention, 0, and in the previous instant is 0. Instant number 5, A of T is on the high level, and B has complete the commutation, so is 1. Instead, the previous value was 0. Instant number 6, we have 111, because B is on the high level, and also the previous sample, and A is exactly on the edge, so we keep the convention. Instant number 7, A has completed the commutation, so it is 0. Instead, B is again on the high level, both the present and the previous values. Instant number 8, we have again 110, because A is on the low level, and B is on the edge, the present value, so we keep the convention, and the previous one was 1. Okay, then same consideration, the pattern shape will repeat and will continue in the same way. Now let's consider the outputs of the decoder. as we can see them. And let's consider what are these outputs if we sample them with a frequency that is 4, the original one in the channel A or in the channel B, or otherwise 8 with respect to the original two signals. Considering the first case, sample frequency 4, the frequency of the channels, we can have the outputs, we can select the outputs of the decoders that are separately highlighted in green or in red. In other words, if you look at the first series into the upper decoder, you see that we will select the output 0, the output 2, the output 7, and the output 5. Conversely, we can also select the output 0, the output 3, the output 7, and the output 4. The choice depends on the fact that we can start in sampling or in one of the instant odd or in one of the instant even in the series. That is, we can sample the sequence 1, 3, 5, 7 or the sequence 2, 4, 6, 8 corresponding to the colors we have chosen, green and red. So I repeat, the selected outputs could be 0, 2, 7 and 5 or 0, 3, 7, 4 depending into the depending on the moment into which we start the sampling. Let's consider the second decoder. We can repeat the same considerations as we did for the first one. So we can group the odd or even instance of time into which we perform the sampling. Considering the green ones, we will have the output 1, 4, 6, and 3 selected. And considering instead the red group, we will have the output number 0, 4, 7, and 3 again possible selected. Instead, if, and I am referring to the right lower part of the slide, if we perform sampling with 8 times the original frequency, the output that can be selected for in the first decoder are 0, 2, 3, 7, 5, and 4, and in the second decoder are 1, 0, 4, 6, 7, and 3. If slide number 49, we consider the same situation for the counterclockwise rotation, we will have the sequence of numbers that I have reported onto the slide. I don't want to repeat all the long considerations, but if you do this by exercise, you will easily obtain that for the first decoder, sampling 8 times the original frequency, the selected outputs will be 0, 1, 3, 4, 6, and 7, and for the second decoder will be 0, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7 itself. Instead, if the sampling frequency selected is only 4 times the original ones, depending on the moment into which we start to sample, we can feature the selection of outputs 4, 6, 3, and 1 in the first decoder, or 4, 7, 3, and 0 for the second possible strip. Considering the second decoder, instead we can have the selection of the outputs 2, 7, 5, and 0, or the outputs 3, 7, 4, and 0 again. Now we can compare the different sequences in the clockwise rotation. I have repeated, for sake of convenience, the same figure of the previous slide in the upper, in the lower part of slide 49, with the sequence of outputs selected in the counterclockwise rotation. And this clearly shows the ambiguity into which we can fall if we sample the values with a frequency that is only 4 times the original one. In fact, looking counterclockwise rotation to the first decoder, we see 4631 or 4730. And looking at the second decoder, we see 2750 or 3740. Now let's consider the clockwise rotation, and let's consider the two sequences corresponding to, again, 4 times the original frequency of the channels. We can have 0, 2, 7, 5 for the first decoder, but even 0, 3, 7, and 4. And for the second decoder, 1, 4, 6, and 3, and 0, 4, 7, and 3. This is clearly ambiguous and useless, because if we are lucky, we will fall during the sampling for the first decoder, for example, in the sequence 0275 and 1, 4, 6 and 3 for the clockwise rotation, and again, if we are lucky, in the sequence 4, 6, 3 and 1 for the decoder 1 and 2, 7, 5 and 0 for the decoder 2 in the counterclockwise rotation. In this case, the outputs are clearly separated and there is no ambiguity in the evaluation of the counting units. But if we are not lucky and we fall in the sequence 4730 for the first decoder, the sequence 3740 in the second decoder, and similar for the clockwise rotation, the same sequence 0374 for the first decoder, 0473 for the second decoder, clearly we are not able to distinguish between clockwise and counterclockwise, since the connection to the counters are the same in both the kinds of rotations. Instead, this ambiguity is not present if we consider all the 8 possible values, that is, if we sample with a frequency that is 8 times the original one. In fact, in the counterclockwise rotation, the outputs selectable are 0, 1, 3, 4, 6, and 7 for the first decoder, and 0, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 for the second one. So, I repeat, counterclockwise rotation, we can select the exit number 1 and a number 6 for the first decoder, and number 2 and number 5 for the second one. Coming back, looking back at the slide 38, we can do the opposite for the clockwise rotation. That is, we will choose the output number 2 and number 5 in the first decoder, and the output number 1 and number 6 for the second decoder. This clearly avoids any ambiguity and performs correctly, so giving us the possibility to do the calculation in the right way and to estimate properly the entity of the rotation together with the direction into which it happened. Another possible use of pulses is for timing. This is very important in industries, because often we need to associate to an event, whatever it is, the date and the moment into which that event happened. This is called time stamping. For example, we must know the situation in the store at the beginning of the daily production, and of course we must know what is the situation at the end of the day, to monitor the production, its level, its rate, and to eventually improve the some steps in the production chain that needs to be better monitored. In doing this, the association between the event and its relative own time is affected by some errors that are due both to the internal model with which we describe the time and to the procedures that we execute to detect the time itself. We can have delays and latencies. The first ones are due to the timer acquisition software and to the event recognition. We will call them TEL and TReveal, TREV. At first, the timer acquisition software. You know, because we have already described this scenario in the past, that the acquisition from a microprocessor of the value of a timer can be done on a polling basis, so on a sample-by-sample approach, or under interrupt. When a certain interval of time has expired, the timer rises an interrupt request to the microprocessor port itself. Then a routine, a suitable routine, would read the registers of the timer and will understand what time is it and associate it to the event that has been recognized. In both the cases, the sample interval or the time for the electronics circuits to detect the situation and to activate the interrupt routine and to perform the acquisition from the timer, both the approaches take time. And this introduces a delay between the moment into which the event happens and the moment into which the relative time is acquired and fixed. Moreover, we have also a delay due to the recognition of the event. If, for example, we are recognizing an event on the basis of the commutation of a signal, we have to acquire the signal into a previous instant of time. We have to acquire the signal at now, and we have to perform the comparison and to say, okay, the event has happened or not, and this requires time. Less time if all these things are done through an electronic circuit, for example through a latch or a flip-flop internal to the port of a microprocessor that activates an interrupt routine. But in any case, even in this case, we have a time that is lost in doing these procedures. All these phenomena are grouped under the definition we gave TEL and TREV. But there is another source of delay that we can have in such a kind of situations, and related to the level of importance that the operations we are doing have in the overall task scheduling of the operating system. These are the so-called latencies. A latency is the time interval between an event and its perception, and this is due to the fact that the routine that should identify the event could be not the one under execution in the CPU. And this, you know, is due to the fact that the scheduling policies in the operating system will follow several algorithms, several criteria, and maybe that the routine that has to identify the commutation in a particular signal is not the most important at that moment, or will receive the CPU after a time interval that is established on a fairness policy that assigns quantum times of CPU execution to all the tasks that are currently in the so-called ready queue. Even a situation like this introduces a delay between the moment into which the event happens and the moment into which the system recognizes it and fixed the time into which the event has happened. But this is the, let's say, most dangerous, because such a kind of latency is not deterministic, because it depends on the particular status of the queue of jobs currently in execution that cannot be foreseen a priori. So, summarizing, we can have three possible sources of delays due to the time acquisition, due to the event recognition, and due to the latency on the basis of the priority assigned to the task that are related to this particular operation. So, when we measure the time associated to an event, the time provided by the machine will be more correctly saying included into a fork. That is, we have a certain degree of uncertainty when we say, looking at the machine, that event is happened at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. In fact, you see three recipes in slide 51 that try to express this concept. If the event that we are defining, considering, is internal to the machine, for example, the switch of a control unit signal, I mean something that happens directly on the board into which the CPU is lodged, we can consider the TST, that is the time stamping, the time that the machine associates to the event, as something that is included between the real time, the real clock time into which the event happened, augmented with the time needed to read the timer unit. And this is the superior edge, the superior limit of this interval. But we have also a lower limit, an inferior limit of this fork, due to the fact that this quantity is affected by the error of the model with which, internally to the machine, the time is represented. I mean that the time internally to the machine can be affected by an underestimation of the real time that is passing. In other words, it could be that the real time is going on, but the representation internal to the machine is, let's say, affected by a quantity that diminishes it. We will see in the next lesson how this could happen, but in the fork, this mistake, this small inaccuracy, is represented by the quantity called Tij. So we have this fork with an inferior limit and a superior limit that is, let's say, extended in case the event is external to the machine, because it is necessary to recognize the event just to remain on examples we are familiar to, we can consider the switch, the commutation of a signal external to the CPU and acquired through a port. You see that in the fork, a new entity appears that is called CREV. CREV, you remember, is the definition of the time necessary for revealing the event. It doesn't matter if this is done through an interrupt approach or through a polling approach. But there is another quantity that is included in this formula, in this interval, called latency. Clearly, the task that is charged to recognize the event external to the CPU is one of the jobs that are in the queue for being executed by the CPU itself. And clearly, it will feature a priority that perhaps is not the most important in that moment. So it will wait its own chance to use the CPU, and this will imply a delay in the execution of this task. This delay depends on the number of the jobs in the queue, their priority. If, for example, a more important task arrive with respect to the one that has to reveal the commutation in the port, when the task itself should acquire the usage of the CPU. So we can't say that this latency is fixed, but it depends on situations that are not deterministic. For this reason, in the upper limit of the formula, we wrote latency max, because we consider the worst case into which the task is delayed as much as possible. Conversely, into the lower limit of the formula, this quantity shouldn't be considered, so we could write zero, but it is not included. Finally, such a kind of not accuracy problems that can affect us, this measurement, can be considered also when we estimate the duration of time between two events, two external events. One happens at a certain time and the other one happens into another time. To evaluate the right uncertainty interval into which the difference the between the two timestamping associated to the events will be included, it is necessary to subtract also the terms considered in the previous recipe, in the previous formula. So I'm saying that to the first event we associate a timestamping TST1, and to the second event we associate a timestamping definition, a timestamping value that is called TS2. The interval between the two events is defined as TST1 minus TST2. What are the upper and lower limits that of the interval, of the uncertainty interval that characterizes this measurement, this value provided by doing TST1 minus TST2. In other words, when I say that doing TST1 minus TST2, the two events has a distance in time of 100 milliseconds. Really, what kind of intervals are represented by that value? we have to consider the two worst cases. The worst case in the upper limit definition and the worst case in the lower limit definition. The worst case in the upper limit definition is obtained if we consider that the maximum limit, the upper limit in the time stamping, is considered as affecting one of the two time stampings, while the lower limit is affecting the other one time stampings. In other words, we have to subtract the lower limit from the upper one. That is, to make t lowercase plus the latency plus the electronic timer acquisition time plus the time necessary for revealing the event minus t lowercase tig t the revealing of the event and t el that is the time necessary for reading the timer. By doing this subtraction we will obtain tag plus t maximum latency because the other quantities will disappear. The same subtraction must be done when we consider the lower limit affecting tst1 minus tst2. In other words, we have to perform the subtraction between the lower limit in the previous formula and the upper limit in the, again, previous formula. That is t minus tig plus trev plus tel minus t lowercase plus the latency, the el quantity, and the time for revealing the event. Again, similar quantities reciprocally eliminate, so we obtain minus tig minus t maximum latency. That is the last formula of slide 51. The latency cannot be estimated. We can instead have a good estimation of the maximum latency because this is the maximum possible delay that can affect the ready queue of execution in a microprocessor. Instead, it is possible to estimate the TIG quantity, that is the granularity of the error with which the time is represented internally to the machine. But this requires a specific explanation of how internally to the machine the time is represented, and this will be the issue of the next lesson.